Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Tammy Carver. Welcome to the John Carver Show. My husband has helped thousands of people around the world lead happier and more successful lives. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, this show will help you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So today I titled the text, What Precedes Your Leap? What Precedes Your Leap? Over in Psalm chapter 19, it says this, "The heavens are telling of the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of His hands." Today I'm talking about what precedes your leap. And your leap can be categorized in probably a variety of different ways. In fact, back in the 60s, in the early 60s in the United States, the President of the United States had a goal, had several goals. One of his goals was, quote, landing a man on the moon and returning him to safety to the earth. He had a goal. He declared what that goal was. But Kennedy declared the goal way before it became a reality. And that's the big picture of what I want to share here today, that most of the time you and I need to declare a goal long before we see it in front of us. And sometimes that's not very easy to do. So I'm going to repeat this little phrase multiple times here in the next half hour or so. But the declaration precedes the leap. The declaration precedes the leap. And I've shared this before on a few different times, that oftentimes that if you want to accomplish something that's extraordinary, or at least extraordinary in your own mind, it's really important to either shut up about it, which is probably not what you need to do. But I think what gets a lot of people moving, especially those people that are driven to do stuff, whatever that definition is, they tell a lot of people what they're going to do. They declare it. They make sure that the world, their world, knows what they're going to do. And then, as I've said here, they're either hung by their tongue or they're going to call themselves a liar because they choose not to go through with it. A guy named Thomas Aquinas said, "Faith has to do with things that are not seen and hope with things that are not at hand." Again, faith has to do with things that are not seen and hope with things that are not at hand. William Booth wrote a long time ago, "Faith and works should travel side by side. Faith and works should travel side by side, step answering to step, like the legs of somebody walking. First faith and then works and then faith again and then works again until they are scarcely distinguished which one and which is the other." Have you met people, whether they're in school, whether they're in the workplace, that they do a lot of talking and don't do a lot of doing? I'm sure you've met them. I know I've met them more than a few times, that they talk, but that's as far as they get. They just talk about doing stuff and they never get around to doing stuff. Over in Matthew chapter 8, it tells the story. I'm not going to share the whole story. I'm going to share the end of the story, or at least read the end of the story. There was a story there where one of Christ's followers, actually several of them, were out on a boat, and Peter had the opportunity to do the extraordinary. Well, he did the extraordinary, and the big story is that he walked on water. He got out of the boat and walked on the water. But in Matthew 8:26, it says, "And he said to them, why are you afraid? Are you of little faith? Then he rose and he rebuked the wind, and there was a great calm." So many times when you're in the middle of the storm, you see the winds and the waves and the terror that is all around you, and forget that sometimes you're not in control of the terror that goes around you, but you are in control of how you respond to that terror. And that's so difficult for some of us, because oftentimes our emotions rule our logic more than our logic rules our emotions. I don't know if that's common. In fact, I know that's not common for everybody, but it is common for at least half of us, that our emotions tend to take the front seat instead of the back seat. I'll say it again. The declaration precedes your leap. The declaration precedes your leap. Over in Acts chapter 14, starting in verse 9, it says, he listened to Paul speaking, and Paul, looking intently at him and seeing that he had faith to be made well, said in a loud voice, stand upright on your feet. And he sprang up and began walking. How many times in your own life haven't you been afraid to declare something or to state something or to put your neck so far out there or to get out on that very last thin, paper-thin branch because you're afraid that that branch is going to break, or you're afraid that you stick your neck out too far that some bad things are going to happen? Well, I would say there are times when bad things do happen because you put yourself out there. But I'd say more than not that good things can happen because the majority of people choose not to do these things. The majority of people decide not to put themselves out there and do the impossible, at least in quotes, or attempt to do things that are extraordinary. So if you're one of the few of the few of the few who try to do some great things and do some extraordinary things, then chances are you're going to be honored. Chances are you're going to be recognized. Chances are you're going to impact people that you would not have impacted if you wouldn't have been out there on that razor-thin branch or sticking your neck so far out there that you're terrified during the entire process. Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, we read it over and over again. It says that we're supposed to walk by faith and not by sight. That is such an oxymoron to me. Even still, being raised in the church all these years, it's still a foreign concept to me, because most days I walk by sight and not by faith. I think that's common for most of us. But it says clearly in Scripture that we're supposed to do quite the opposite. In fact, if you can expand that thought a bit more in a paraphrase form, it says, so we are always of good courage. We know that while we are not at home in the body, we are away from the Lord, for we walk by faith and not by sight. There's a terrible story that was during in the 1940s, where a father was holding his small son by the hand, and he had run from a building that had been struck by a bomb. And in the front yard was a shell hole. And seeking shelter as quickly as possible, the father jumped in the hole and held up his arms for his son to follow. Terrified, yet hearing his father's voice telling him to jump, the boy replied, I can't see you. But the father, you see, he looked up against the sky tinted red by the burning buildings and called to the silhouette of his son. Mind you, he couldn't see his own son either. But he saw a form of his son. He saw the outline of his son. So he said to his son, but I can see you, jump. So the boy jumped because he trusted his father. And I think a large part of the time that you and I choose not to do stuff that's extraordinary is because we don't trust what's going to happen on the other end. Now, I'm not saying that we jump blindly, even though I just read that we're supposed to walk by faith and not by sight. I get that. But there's an ingredient there of common sense. You know, I think that some people fail to incorporate into their ingredients of doing great things. I think we're supposed to be smarter in how we function and how we do things, but merge that with faith and you can find out some very extraordinary things. I want you to turn over to Hebrews 11. I want to invest a little bit of time there in the Living Bible that kind of paraphrases this in a semi-modern way. Hebrews 11, Living Bible. It says, what is faith? What is faith? It says, it is the confident assurance of something we want is going to happen. The confident assurance. I mean, most kids have a confident assurance, at least in the United States, of Christmas morning. They go all year, many times, counting down the days to the next Christmas. That's just a silly example. It is certainly that what we hope for is waiting for us, even though we cannot see it up ahead. Men of God in days of old were famous for their faith. So let's share a few examples of these people. In verse 3, by faith, by believing God, this paraphrase says, we know that the world and the stars, in fact, all things were made at God's command, and that they were all made from things that, listen, can't be seen, this says. Verse 4, it was by faith that Abel obeyed God and brought an offering that pleased God more than Cain's offering did. God accepted Abel and proved by accepting his gift, and though Abel is long dead, we can still learn lessons from him about trusting God. We could run a tangent on that example all by itself. In verse 5, Enoch trusted God too, and that is why God took him away to heaven without dying. Suddenly he was gone because God took him. Skip down to now verse 7. Noah was another who trusted God. When he heard God's warning about the future, listen to this. Noah believed him even though there was no sign of a flood. And wasting no time, he built the ark and saved his family. Noah's belief in God was in direct contrast to the sin and disbelief of the world, which refused to obey. And because his faith, he became one of those whom God has accepted. I'll repeat this a few different times in a few different ways, but in this story alone, that faith means doing stuff before you see the why behind what you need to do. Oftentimes, you step out and do stuff without in fact, I would say most of the time, you step out and do stuff without seeing the end result, and that's where faith jumps in. Now, again, I'll say it multiple times. Now, I'm not talking about jumping stupidly. I'm not talking about jumping into an empty pool. I'm not suggesting that at all. I am suggesting, though, that there is a time, there are situations in your life that even though you don't understand where it's going to end up, you know in your heart of hearts that this is the path that you need to take in order to fulfill some sort of destiny in your own life or do something that eventually is going to impact more than just you. And that's really what this faith is all about. It's about impacting people way beyond you that you will probably never meet or will never even be able to have a face-to-face interaction with. But as we see over and over in Scripture, that happens consistently. Down in verse 8, it says, Abraham trusted God, and when God told him to leave home and go far away to another land, he promised to give him. Abraham obeyed. Away he went, not even knowing where he was going. And even when he reached God's promised land, he lived in tents like a mere visitor, as did Isaac and Jacob, to whom God gave the same promise. So Abraham did this because he was confident, waiting for God to bring him to that strong heavenly city whose designer and builder was God. Think about this story. This story. Let me pause on this story. Abram at the time, his name was Abram at the time, was a wealthy guy. He was settled. He had everything in place. He had all investments in place. He had 401k, and using that an exaggeration, of course. But he had everything in line. Houses were paid off. You know, cars were paid off. He had everything he needed. And again, I'm stretching the truth a bit here. But the point is that he was comfortable. But he did something that didn't make sense because he knew it was the right thing to do at the time. And again, that for some of us can be terrifying. So again, when you say, I believe, in whatever form or whatever shape that takes, that is a declaration, isn't it? That's a decision that you make that even though you don't see the results now, making that statement, I think, has a certain amount of power to it. And I'm not sure if, in fact, I know I can't get my arms all the way around that because I don't understand most of it. I know I'll leave that alone. But I don't understand most of it. But it has to start with that declaration. It has to start with that statement that you're going to do something even though that something makes no sense at all. The Declaration of Independence was written before independence was rendered. And I think sometimes we forget that if we, you know, I shared this often with people, that if you want to do something extraordinary, you need to write it down. And you need to keep that, whatever that is, that document, in front of you consistently. Because if that declaration, if that something in writing isn't in front of you consistently, because of life, we're going to forget what's on the declaration. So many times, in fact, in my office, I have a variety of declarations, not only on my desk, but also on the whiteboard that I have in my office, that I frankly haven't touched the whiteboard in a year, because there's some declarations on there that I don't want to mess with. Because those declarations often, at a glance, remind me of certain things that I let slip. And that's why it's so important for you to know what's in the Bible. Because when you know what's in the Bible and you review what's in the Bible consistently, it's really a declaration. It's a reminder to you that you can accomplish certain things, that you can overcome certain things, that if you're not reminded by it, then you're going to forget that you have everything that you need to accomplish it. Over in Deuteronomy chapter number 33, the King James says, Deuteronomy 32 verse 3, it says, "Because I will publish the name of the Lord, ascribe ye greatness unto our God." Another way to say it is, I will proclaim the name of the Lord, how glorious is our God. There is a certain measure of power in a proclamation. Recently, and again, I don't know when this is going to be watched, but in August of 2016, President Obama declared that some 200 people that were in prison are now, or at least by the end of this year, will be freed. He declared, he emancipated, if you will, these people. It doesn't matter what you think is good or bad. It's he declared. He signed a statement that he is now emancipating these people. These people are still in prison, because there's a date that's going to come, but he declared, he emancipated. It's in writing. It's going to happen. These people are now believing, as a result of the act of one man in power, that they are going to be free. Now, if you stop and think about all the things that we've been given over the years, we've been promised blessings. We've been promised good things. We've been promised that we have the ability to do things that we can, that we know that we can do. But these doubts, these seeds of other people's negative opinions keep dragging us back. But I'm telling you, in the Bible it says we have been declared that we can do really almost anything that we think that we can do by the power of God, by not only the power of God, by God placing people in your lives that you never even met, that you will never meet. I said this last week, that there are situations and there's times that the rules will be changed to render you a declaration that has never been done before. Let me say it maybe a different way. You're struggling in certain areas and certain things have not been done before, but because you've been faithful with certain things, then there's stuff going on behind the scenes that you don't even know about, that there's going to come a day that something's going to come together because you've done your part. You didn't know that all this was going on behind the scenes, but because you've been doing your part, you've been faithful in what you're supposed to do, even though you can't see the full picture, that things are going to come and align itself with you that will blow your mind. But if you quit in the middle, or if you don't get started because you're afraid of sticking your neck out, you're afraid of getting out on that little tiny branch of faith and stepping out and doing things that frankly may not make sense, and you are the least qualified person in the building to do it, then God will honor that because you know and I know that you're doing it, I hope, not because of showing yourself, but because there's other people who might need what you have. And that, for some of us, can be considerably intimidating, because some of us think that we're not all that. So how dare us? The point being is, it's not about you anyway. And it's been taught here for 40 years almost in this church that we're just a funnel. If you view yourself as just a funnel, that you're just a highway for blessings to come through you, then there's no room for ego. There's no room for pride, because it's not you anyway, because you're just a highway. Does that make any sense with anybody at all? So over in Exodus chapter 33, verse 19, it says, again, Exodus 33, 19, it says, "And the Lord said, I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you, and I will proclaim my name, O Lord, in your presence. I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion." God renders mercy to people like me and like you who don't deserve mercy. How many times haven't you been tempted not to render mercy to other people until you look in the mirror and realize that, you know what, mercy has been rendered to me when I didn't deserve mercy. Grace has been rendered to me. Forgiveness has been rendered to me when I did not deserve grace or forgiveness. And that's when it gets real. That's when that pill grows from a small pill to a pill like this. When you have to swallow that pill and bite your tongue and not go and not pay back evil for evil, because you know that if things were justified, you would not be in the blessed situation that you are now, because you should be doing some pretty bad deeds, because you've done some pretty bad deeds in your life. Over in Exodus chapter 34, we read that God said to Moses, "Cut out for yourself two stone tablets like the former ones." And I shared this. I can't remember if I shared it in a blog or an article or over this pulpit here, but it carries a lot of weight when stuff, and I'll use that term loosely, is written down, because the Old Testament was run by what was written down, and there were hundreds of things that were written down, and additions to it, PSs to, and other stuff that were not necessarily really in the founding document, I'll say, of the Old Testament. And how many times haven't you and I kind of added stuff, added addendums and amendments to our lives and our weight that we carry upon ourselves, when that wasn't the original intent? That we've picked up stuff over the years and we've done stuff over the years that have added things to our lives that now slow us down from the original declaration, from the original rule, from the original law, and then things got really, really hairy. How many times haven't you heard about laws that are on the books now in the United States that make no sense? An example, a silly example would be, you know, about horse-drawn carriages. Well, how many people still in the United States, on a percentage basis, travel from A to B via a horse and carriage? I mean, but there's rules still on the books. So if you break the rules, there could be a penalty, how silly it might be. But again, there are rules and laws in place that really don't matter. So God declared who He is in these Ten Commandments in Exodus 34. God declared who He is, not only who He is, but the rules. It's very simple, right? I mean, it's listed them out very, very clearly. And oftentimes we muddy up the rules a lot, don't we? We fill it in with excuses and we fill it in with stuff that really don't make any sense at all. So could that be a model for you and I? That is, the declarations that we put in our lives intentionally can either direct us or distract us. And again, I could chase a bunch of stories there. I think that we're in, at least some of us, not all of us, I think that some of us think that we're more in charge than we think. How many young people, I'm talking toddlers, young people, think that they're in charge when they don't even have a clue what's going on about life? Even teenagers, you know, they think right here, and they have no clue what's going on past their nose. But they live their lives, they share their opinions, how stupid they are, because they can only see maybe up to the end of their nose. So us old folks, older folks, we know that they don't know that they don't know, because they haven't been breathing oxygen long enough. Charles Price shared an example in a book called The Real Faith on page 88. He said, a few days later, I was heading out of a building in company with Dr. Manchester, the man who buried President McKinley. At the door of the auditorium sat the man in his wheelchair, patiently waiting for the doors to open for the evening service. Now, Charles Price was an evangelist. He was a preacher that lived, 80 years-ish ago. Dr. Manchester looked at the face of the man and stopped. Then he walked over to him, and I followed. Are you coming for prayer? He asked. For prayer to receive healing was the reply. May I insert, he declared. He was there for healing. There was something different about this man. His voice, his tone, his eyes. Such a look of reflected glory on his face, Dr. Price writes. I knew something had happened. Tell me, I said, what has happened? My brother, I discern you have experienced something that is so wonderful, I can feel its glory, though I do not know what it is. Then he told me he had been with Jesus, his story. He told me that at 4 a.m, a consciousness of the presence of his Lord had overwhelmed him. He knew Jesus was in the room in a special way. He told how his voice of adoration had commenced to praise his Lord. He then said, he then became conscious of an infusion of life divine. Something passed from Jesus to him, and he felt as though a fog had rolled away from his heart and mind. From that moment, he knew his struggles were over, and a sweet and holy peace was wrapped around his soul. He told us that now he knew that when once again he came to obey his Lord in the anointing with oil, strength would follow from Jesus and life divine would be given him to restore him to health and strength. So he ends, as I looked into Dr. Manchester's face, I noticed that tears stood in his eyes. Then he spoke, why does this man have to wait until tonight? He does not, I replied. The great physician is here now. Jesus of Nazareth is passing by. A moment later, it was over. Out of his wheelchair rose that man. He ran and jumped and praised the Lord for his deliverance. It was a miracle of divine power. Now, in this story, in this example, the man declared. He proclaimed. And we can read that in the New Testament one of several different times where the person to whom the miracle was rendered declared, he proclaimed. Again, the declaration, in this literal case, the declaration precedes the leap, doesn't it? Faith proclaims what it doesn't see. And again, half of us are wired in a totally different way that we want to see it before we believe it. But Scripture tells us that we have to believe it before we see it. And I don't know about you, but that's a constant struggle for some of us. Over in Matthew chapter 9, we read, starting in about verse 20. Again, Matthew chapter 9, starting in verse 20. It says, and a woman was hemorrhaging for about 12 years and came up from behind him and touched the fringe of his cloak. That is Jesus' cloak. For she was saying to herself, listen to this declaration. If I only touch his garment, I will get well. But Jesus, turning and seeing her, she said, daughter, take courage. Your faith has made you well. At once the woman was made well, because she said, if I just touch the hem of his garment, I will be healed. I think a lot of people don't try great things because they don't expect great things to happen. I'll say it again. I think a lot of people don't attempt great things because they don't expect great things to happen. If there's anything I've learned about being in the sales business for a long time, it's that the worst that can happen to you is somebody can say no. But if you don't ask, it's unlikely that you're going to get a yes. So if you not go out on that branch, using the same examples, if you don't stretch your neck out so far, you're not going to get anywhere close to where you need to be because you're afraid of the no's when you have to, in sales, you have to get through a lot of no's in order to get to yeses. But you're going to find that many times that you may not have to go through too many no's because the direction that you feel that you need to go in order to impact people's lives, the doors may be open for you anyway, just waiting for you to walk through them, if that makes any sense. Romans 10:17 kind of echoes what I shared a couple times already, where it says, so faith comes from hearing, and hearing through, I think King James calls it the Word of God. That is, to consistently be reminded, my paraphrase, of what the promises are and what the capacity is, what your capacity is, and what's possible. So if we're not listening to it, if we're not hearing it often, if we're not reading it often, then that's going to slip. It's going to kind of fade away in time. That there comes a time when you need to pivot just a little bit in order to see these opportunities that I'm talking about. So the faster you pivot in your deepest, darkest times can make the difference in your life in such a big way, because when you're in the middle of your darkest time, it's so overwhelmingly tempting to focus on your deepest, darkest time. Does that make any sense to anybody here? Because sometimes your focus, the negative situation you're in becomes all-encompassing. You walk in it, you walk through it, you carry it with you, and I'll be the first to tell you, that is really easy to do, to carry it with you everywhere you go. But many times, even if it's for a second or two or a moment, to pivot just a little bit away from that situation and see what's possible outside that cloud, you're going to see that, you know what, there's some real potential. In fact, yesterday we had a little birthday thing at the house, and we're coming back from getting some food to take back to the house, and there were some seriously dark skies. I mean, like dark, dark clouds that probably ran, I would guess, 5 miles square of our house-ish. And I just knew, getting to our house, that we were going to have a terrible storm with terrible winds and huge rain, because the signs showed it. So I was getting anxious, are we going to be able to do this and do this? So I'm already worrying about something that, in this case, it never happened at all. It drizzled, it spit, I'll even spit, it didn't even rain, it spit a little bit, and then it went away. So how many times haven't we embraced the potential of bad stuff happening when really bad stuff wasn't even intending on happening? But we thought it because we assumed, because it looked dark and scary, and we, you know, the signs pointed to some very difficult situations happening, but it really wasn't going to happen anyway. So you borrowed the trouble that wasn't going to happen anyway. So you're carrying the stress and the struggle and the intimidation and the fear and all those other feelings that go along hand and foot with that. That you know, it goes through a situation where you're worrying about a bunch of nothing at all. So the faster you pivot from what could be in a negative way to what can be in a positive way can really change your entire outlook completely. There's a story about Starbucks, and this little coffee shop that was founded a long time ago is now known around the world as one of the places to go if you want overpriced coffee and or snacks or internet access or whatever. But it all started with an idea. It started with something that didn't exist. And how many inventions and how many things in life that you and I are using right now, you know, a cell phone or I mean, years ago when I was a kid, to be able to see somebody on a watch or a phone, that was like science fiction. I mean, now, in fact, I told, who was it, Tim the other day, or Christine, I can't remember, we were out and going through a store, and the doors opened. You know how they do now? I said, when I was a kid, that only happened on the 1960s Star Trek shows. I mean, that was fiction, man. That didn't happen. If you walked up to a door back then, your nose would get bruised because that door ain't going to open. Your hand's got to take that door and open it. Now, if it, at least for me, Now, when I walk into the Staples store and the door doesn't open fast enough, I get mad. It's like, what is wrong with this door? I get irritated because the door didn't open fast enough. How many times haven't we, we looked at stuff and we think it's always been there, but it really hasn't always been there. We've just gotten accustomed to the stuff now, and now we're spoiled. Okay, I can't speak for you. I'm spoiled by the technology. I'm spoiled by the inventions. But somebody had to start somewhere without it even existing. The point I'm trying to make here is that you have to declare it before you see it, before other people can then enjoy it. Because if the declaration doesn't happen first, then the miracles and the inventions and the lives that you're going to touch will never happen. So it starts with, as I said last week, you got to be critically careful what comes out of your mouth. Live an example of being able to change your point of view relatively quickly. Turn over to John chapter 21. John chapter 21. Sometimes you only need to change just a little bit. Oftentimes we get afraid that we have to change a lot in order to get the results that we're looking for, meaning that we have to radically change our lifestyle, or we have to radically alter certain relationships in order to get certain things. But in some cases, it's just a little tweak, just a little tweak. Let's share a story. In John chapter 21, starting in verse 1, it says, after these things, Jesus manifests himself again to the disciples on the Sea of Tiberias. This is after some very bad things happened. Jesus was crucified. Verse 2. Simon Peter and Thomas, called Didymus, and Nathanael and the sons of Zebedee and two others were together. Verse 3. Simon Peter said to them, I am going fishing. They said to them, well, we'll come with you. There was nothing on TV that time. No movies playing, nothing on Netflix, so they decided to go with them. So they went out, got in the boat, and they fished all night and caught nothing at all. Verse 4. But when the day was now breaking, listen, Jesus stood on the beach. Yet the disciples did not know it was Jesus. Verse 5. So Jesus said to them, children, have you not caught anything? They answered and said, no. Now verse 6. And he said, here's the point of the text. And he said to them, cast the net on the right-hand side of the boat, and you will find a catch. So they cast, and they were not able to haul in because of the great number of fish. Skip down to verse number. Now, let's continue the story. Verse 7. Therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. So when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put his outer garment on, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. But the other disciples came in the little boat, for they were not far from the land, but about 100 yards away, dragging the net full of fish. Verse 9. So when they got out of the So when they got out on the land, they saw a charcoal fire already laid and fish placed on it, and bread. Verse 10. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish which you have caught. Simon went up and threw the net to land, full of large fish, 153. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. We're talking a minor adjustment. We're not talking, he didn't say go another 100 yards out. He didn't say, pick up the boat and put it on your backs and take it to the next lake or the next sea. No, he said just switch gears just a little bit and go from one side to the other because it's right there. And what was very interesting to me is when they got to the shore, there was some fish already cooking. So if I read between those lines, maybe insert a little commentary here. Jesus knew where the fish were. Jesus knew how to get the fish. Jesus has the fish already prepared for us, if we pay attention to where the fish could be found. Not just a little fish, but a lot of fish. Yeah. It's so critical for you and I to pay attention to the little hunches, to the little words of wisdom from maybe people and situations and lessons that we wouldn't necessarily listen to if we weren't so desperately trying to find an answer to a situation. I think it was two weeks ago, Karen was up here speaking, and she used the word perpetual. Of all the things Karen said, I can't remember any of the other stuff, nor are you going to remember most of what I say here today, so it's not directed at Karen, please understand that. But she used the word perpetual, and man, so I'm trying to play the piano and type the word perpetual on my phone over there before I forgot the word. And that word literally carried me the entire week, and it bled into so many other things that I was able to help several thousand people, literally, in the following weekend as a result of one word. But the point being is, if we're not listening consistently to everybody who has a good character, that has wisdom, then how are we going to be able to build upon these things to do the extraordinary things that you feel that you should be doing in your own life? Does that make any sense at all? Because some of the encouragement, some of the words, some of the adjectives, some of the ideas come from a direction that you wouldn't expect. But because your heart's open and your mind's open and your ears are open, then you want to listen, you want to learn, you want to get something out of everything that's around, or most good things around you. Does that make any sense? Right? It's really, really important. So Jesus declared, so the disciples chose to pivot, to switch to the other side, instead of giving up, because it said in the story that they had been fishing all night and caught nothing. The temptation for most of us, if we've been fishing all night, would be to call it a day and calling a night and go home and get some rest and try again the next day. So they listen to this point. They were already to the point of exhaustion. Listen, they were already to the point of exhaustion, but even though to the point of exhaustion, they had hope because of the declaration. Think about that. Just let that sink in for just a minute, because that just came to me. It's not in my notes, so I'm letting that sink in for a minute. So when you come to the point of declaration, and there's hope and wisdom in the declaration, that can give you just enough fuel and energy and strength to lift the net to the other side to catch something that you were so discouraged you didn't even want to look on the other side, because it hasn't happened in the last 8 or 9 hours anyway. So why even try? Don't ask me to repeat what I just said, because I can't remember it at the moment. But I hope you wrote it down. Jesus knew where all the fish were hiding. I think if you and I choose to get into what's in the Bible more consistently, you're going to find answers to situations that you didn't think existed. You think that you're the only one going through situations in your life, but stuff that you're going through has happened thousands of years ago to millions of people. But because you're in that cloud, that fog, and you live in it, you walk in it, you think you're the only one. That's a constant reminder to me every waking moment that I am not the only one who's ever gone through this particular situation. So there is no room for me to feel sorry for myself, because I'm not the only one who's been through it and who has gotten through it. I just got to keep moving forward in order to find the ways through it. Because if you and I stop in the middle of the funk, F-U-N-K, then we're not going to get through the fog of the funk. Does that make any sense? Am I allowed to say that over the pulpit? I think I just did. So there's another temptation when a declaration causes you to turn a little bit, and that is that the temptation is to think that you've wasted all this time fishing in this story, and you haven't caught anything. But like I said moments ago, sometimes you have to get through a whole bunch of no's in order to get to a lot of yeses. I can remember so many times when I was doing a lot of sales. I was going to Pittsburgh and North PA and Philly and DC and West Virginia. I wasn't home a lot in those days when the kids were small. And there were days that I would go through, you know, a considerable sum of no's, okay? But then there were days that those no's caught up to me, And it was like back-to-back, yes, boom, home run, home run, home run, home run, home run. But if I wouldn't have gotten through the nose, make any sense? If I wouldn't have gotten through those dark times when I felt like getting in the car and going home instead of staying in a motel at night, because I was, you know, a few hundred miles away in some cases, then I wouldn't have been able to get to the yeses that would enable us to pay the house payment. Sometimes you got to keep fishing until you reach a moment of despair, and then when you reach the moment of despair, somebody who knows a little something about fish is going to speak up, because you're not going to listen to this. You're not going to listen to somebody who you think doesn't know about fishing, because you've been fishing for so many years. Peter was a fisherman, right? In the story, that's what he was trained to be. He knows about fish. Don't tell me about fishing. I know about fishing. Peter got to the point of exhaustion. His partners got to the point of exhaustion. And sometimes when you reach the point of exhaustion, then what happens? Your heart opens up and says, just, okay, just anybody can tell me where the fish are. Just please, I have bills to pay, I have kids to feed, etc., etc. So sometimes reaching that point of exhaustion and frustration is really a good thing, because sometimes that's when your heart opens up. Is that the proper way to do it? No, because you should have an open heart and open mind all the time. But there are some people like Peter. I'm not going to get into the whole backstory of Peter right now, but he was a hard head. Hard-headed people sometimes have to get flat on their back before they get it. And that's another sermon for another day. Running out of time. Gideon was another story. We're not going to read it. We're running short on the clock. But he was one of the people that he assumed that he would have to have a certain amount of capital, and I'll use those terms, in order to accomplish a great task. And the story says that God said that you don't need this much capital to get done what I want you to do. Let me leverage a much smaller amount of capital, and let me, God, in the story, do the rest. And I think that's where God gets the most glory. In fact, I know that's where God gets the most glory. When there is a smaller amount of capital, and then God blows that up to be something so much bigger, and then as it says in several places in Scripture, so that God gets the glory and not the people involved get the glory. Because God, that seems to be how God is. God wants the glory about stuff that happens for us instead of us taking the credit for the whole story. So Gideon learned to trust God step by step. Listen, once he bought into the declaration, and that's a total mind shift for some of us, because God said in the story, for those who don't know, Gideon thought that he had to have a lot of warriors to do a certain task. Well, God said, no, we don't need that many people. Just with this way and this way and this way, let's get it down considerably to a fraction of a fraction of a fraction what you had. So oftentimes you and I have to buy into the declaration that something can happen, even though logically and mathematically it doesn't make sense that it can happen. So if you choose to pivot, then a seed is sown. Again, if you choose to pivot just a little bit, then a seed is sown. And when a seed is sown and you care for it, then it'll grow. I can remember when my piano teacher, Phyllis, was teaching me piano. She was teaching me about inversions. And I'm not going to get into the technical part of what inversions are on the piano, but it makes it a whole lot easier to play the piano. And it's much, much less choppy, because I was playing it a certain way. It was very choppy. And she was, but I was fighting against that. I don't want to invert because it was tough. I had to move my fingers in certain ways and stretch certain things and think differently. Well, now, 35, 40 years later, man, I'm old. I don't even think about the inversions anymore, because that's all I do is inversions. I live in inversions on the piano because it's now become part of me. But sometimes that pivot is so squeaky, it's so difficult, And you don't want to oil it because you don't really want to pivot. You don't want to turn around and do it this way because you've been doing it this way for so long in the same way, that even though it sounds choppy. But once I got it, and she wouldn't allow me not to do it. She made me learn the inversions. The point being that once her proclamation was made to me that I had to learn it, and I was a kid, so I was still at home, and so she told my parents that I was being obnoxious and stubborn and other stuff would happen, but that's another sermon. But I finally learned it, and now it's seamless. So those of us who are anti-pivoting and anti-embracing the declarations of other people in your life that can literally radically change your life in a dramatic, positive way, you might want to look at that a little differently from here forward, because they can literally save you time and effort and you not sounding so choppy if you just listen and pay attention. So I'll end with the ultimate declaration is when Jesus Christ rose from the dead. Because he said, and I'll even use these terms, he said it in code, but yet he said it openly, but his followers didn't catch it evidently. But he said what he was going to do, and then he did what he said he was going to do, which now has transformed the lives of millions of people over the last 2,000 plus years. So if that pattern, if that philosophy, for the lack of a better word, or that system works by declaring things in our life to happen and then put feet to the declaration that we declare, then really some amazing things can happen in our lives, but it starts with declaring. I'm so fired up about my fourth book that came out. It's called Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks for a Successful and Rewarding Life. I've compressed about 25 years of knowledge, experience, and learning from a lot of people to help you in your life. You can get a copy of it over at TremendousLifeBooks.com. Again, TremendousLifeBooks.com. Here's some more information about it. For the last 25 years, I've visited with thousands of people in their homes. Many of these people I've met with have no goals, no dreams, no ambitions, and no roadmap for their life. I've seen so many people sitting on their front porches watching life go by. In 2006, my wife and I started building our home with bedrooms for each of our six kids. I always made sure that the foundation of our home was solid. I didn't want to take any chances with the lives of my family. So it is with life. My book, Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks of a Successful, Rewarding Life, is jammed full of ideas that can help you today. My book is a collection of ideas and short stories really designed to help you turn your life around and to help impact the people that you care about and that you love so much. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, Build Your Foundation will help you fortify yourself for a lifetime of success and to give you the courage to go for your dreams in life. Don't miss out on what you can accomplish. You can scale any height and achieve any goal. This book will help you get there. I have a passion to help millions of people change their lives. This book is easy to read, has short chapters, and can help you right now and change your life today. I believe in you. Thank you so much for listening to the John Carver Show. If you want more information about me, just simply go to my website, www.johnwcarver.com. Again, thanks so much for listening to the show today, and remember, I believe in you.
Thank you for listening to the John Carver Show. Please tune in again right here Monday through Friday for more insights and opinions on how you can reach your goals and dreams in